Okay. Looks like our first question is from Jason, who I think we just answered his question, but he'll see if he has a different one. Hey, Jason.
It's a brand new question, I swear.
Okay. No.
All of your answers have been very helpful.
Good.
Okay, so JV partners. I'm kind of to the point where I'm ready to hunt them down, and I can't help but feel it. Even if I'm contacting, going, what can I do for you? It feels kind of transparent. I mean, and obviously you've got to find JV partners that you really can do something for them, right? You can't get a JV partner that you wouldn't want to offer their stuff to your list. So you got to find people of quality and everything else. So just how do you get past that? I'm obviously, you know, looking for JV partners for this launch I'm doing sort of thing, and make the, you know, relationship building natural. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, part of this, Jason, is in your head. And,
okay.
And I can, and I can relate because I have the same feeling. I hate asking people for anything. And that's,
right.
You know, that's one of the reasons I go around giving people stuff. So I hate asking for it.
Right.
And the reality is that if you have a good product and you have good tracking and you do a good launch that's going to convert, what you're really doing is you're saying, hey, do you mind if I put a whole bunch of money in your pocket?
Right.
You know, that's the thing.
People are open to that.
Yeah, that's the thing you have to remember is, you know, it's not like you're asking them to give you anything. You're asking to really, you know, to give them a significant source of revenue. Now, there's lots of people that, you know, go too far the opposite way from you and I. They just think that because they wrote an e-book, it's the greatest gift in the world they could ever give to every JV partner. JV, you know, some person might come to me and say they did create that book about hypnotizing yourself while you're driving.
Right.
And they'll come to me and they'll act like I don't have anything better to do than, you know, promote their product, even though it's a terrible match for my list and I'm getting bombarded with all kinds of other things.
Right.
But so you can't go too far that way. But the reality is, if people aren't business, they're generally in business to make money. And if you've got a good launch and a good product and you're going to track for them and you're going to send them a check, then you're doing them a favor. And so you don't want to be arrogant about it, but that's the first thing you got to install in your head is giving them a way to make money, a targeted way to make money is not a bad thing for them. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
Beyond that, it doesn't always have to be quid pro quo. It doesn't have to be that if they promote for you, you promote for them.
Right.
You know, I'm sending out Christmas cards right now or holiday cards to be politically correct to all my, you know, my top affiliates. And, you know, this past year I had 65 affiliates sell a significant amount of stuff.
Right.
There's no way I can promote for 65 people in the next year. It just is not going to happen because I'm not willing to pound my list like that.
Very good point.
So, you know, it doesn't always have to be reciprocal. And, you know, the thing is, like, if you're in a situation where you're ready to launch, you're getting close to the launch, and you're looking for partners, you know, you probably are in the point where you can't build a huge relationship with them. You know, for me, in this current business, I was fortunate because I spent 3 years getting to know everyone before I came out with a product. And that was one of the reasons I was able to come out with a product and just kill it immediately. Because, you know, it's like one of those, you know, the people that are instant success, when you look behind the scenes, there's usually something behind that.
Right.
And so that was the case with me. You know, I was able to build relationships before I ever asked for anything. But in your situation, you probably can't. So you just got to do your best and, you know, say, hey, you know, you probably get approached a lot on these type of things, but, you know, if I could have just, 2 minutes of your time, I just want to tell you about what I got here. I think I've researched your list. That's one thing you want to make sure that they know that you've done your homework.
Right, so you know that it's compatible.
Yeah, exactly, that you've taken the time and to do the homework that, you know, one good way to do it is to buy their product. That's a great way to do it. Buy the most expensive product they got.
Right.
And, you know, hey, you know, I just wanted to write you, you know, I've got your product. I was just going through it. I really like this thing on page 272 that you said about this. It's really cool. And I'm looking forward to putting this to use. And then, you know, and just for FYI, you know, I've got a business in a similar niche. In fact, I'm coming out with a product, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
It might be the first email might be just gushing about their product and letting them know you know about their product. And then the second email is mentioning what you've got.
Okay.
You know, something along that line. But
and you just made a huge case for doing the internal launch first, I guess, so you can have those numbers, so you can tell them what kind of money you could potentially make them.
Totally.
If you're doing like a coaching program, do you think I could get away with doing an internal launch in order to get those numbers and make it actually have that be part of the same launch? Because I kind of need to get going and do like the bigger launch, but I don't want to, you know, end up screwing it up and blowing my shot with JV partners either.
So ask that question a little bit differently.
Okay.
You said, and make it part of that launch.
Well, right, and be like, do the internal launch, kind of have it your own list be, you know, the early notice list, hey, I'm letting you guys know about this a little bit ahead of time. We wouldn't actually start the program till such and such a date. They're in giving yourself an extra month to do, like, your JV launch after you've already launched to your own list.
Yeah, you could do that, but I think you'll see a much higher return rate. Because if you did your internal launch and then made them wait for a month. Because
buyer's remorse kicks in and they don't have anything to dig into yet.
Right. Because when they go through that launch, you got them amped up, man. They are excited and ready to go. And the last thing they want to hear is okay, now wait for a month. I mean, the analogy that's sticking in my mind is one I probably shouldn't go too far with. But if you could, say, translate this to maybe the bedroom. And you initiated a process where someone was very, very excited about that process.
Right.
And you said, okay, oh, wait a sec, I got to go watch a TV show first.
Right.
Wouldn't go over real well.
May not start back up again.
Exactly. So you'll lose huge momentum and huge buyer satisfaction and drive your return rates through the roof. There's no reason you couldn't do the launch. Now, do the launch, do the internal launch, start. Okay, let's try and make this easy. Say you do, and we're just going to pretend there's no holidays or anything. We're just using calendars here. Say January 1st, you start your pre-launch. January 15th, you do your launch. You start the coaching program. You do your internal launch on the 15th. You start your program. You give yourself a few days to get the bugs, get all the orders processed and stuff, and then come back on January 18th, start your coaching program. And let's say it is 4 weeks long, so it would end approximately February 18th. There's no reason you couldn't start the external launch right there January 15th and then do the external launch January 30th and start another class. So you're running two classes concurrently.
Gotcha. Or even, you know, back-to-back, I guess.
Back-to-back or overlap them or overlap certain sessions of them. Or, you know, you can get real creative with that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And the other thing is like, when you do the external launch, okay, so you're going to have X amount of work to do for your internal launch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have like 2X to do as part of your, if you were doing it as a big, JV, internal JV all mixed together, you would have 2X, okay? You'd have twice as much work. Because working with those JVs is as much work as the rest of the launch. But if you did the internal launch, you get 1X out of the way, and then later on, you do the JV launch. You've already got all that initial work done. You just reuse that internal launch work, and now the extra work you have is working with those partners. So it's not. I hope this is coming across. If I could do this graphically, in fact.
Yeah. No. It totally makes sense. And I mean, I'm just having to strongly resist doing the whole shebang at once. But it just seems like. What you're saying is there's twice as much work to do the other, so it would just be smart to do the small one first.
You do half of your internal launch and half of the external launch. And the other thing you do is first of all, you get your numbers. And, that's so much better in terms of getting partners on board because you've shown them the numbers. You've shown them that, you know, you can execute. But also, you know, there's a lot of little details, and a lot of things can go wrong, and they will for sure because – at least every launch I do, things go wrong.
Right.
And, you know, I try to stress that it doesn't matter if you can screw up all kinds of stuff and it'll still do fine.
Right.
But it's better to screw up on your launch than on the partner's launch.
Right.
And if you're going to pile a bunch of people into the program, you're not sure if the shopping cart works, all the little tiny pieces that if it blows up in your face is fine,
right.
But if it blows up in your partner's face, you're never going to get any promote. You're never going to promote for you again.
Time to look for new partners.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Good questions. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks.
Okay, next one. I don't know. This one's a funky-looking number. It might be an international number, but I don't have anything on the caller ID, so. Hello?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
Jeff, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Hey, Jeff, it's Walter. I have a follow-up on that.
Okay.
How to handle comments and stuff. Because I think you saw just the last part. Like, I sent two questions. I think you saw just the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Very briefly, the story. I started the blog in February, and it's a coaching program, let's say, in the weight loss industry, right? So I started this, and pretty much all those initial blog posts. So I did a launch February. I launched in March, and my pre-launch content were only a couple of emails that I sent with, let's say, the free part of the coaching program. And that was the idea of giving advanced results to people, like what Frank Caron would be doing and stuff. And they were getting results, and then I did the launch. Now, if you look at the blogs and stuff and the comments, you can get what the content was. But the second time I did the launch, it was in October, and I actually set up a separate blog for the training part, the free training part. It was a blog protected by passwords. I had videos in it. And much more content than just those two emails. Now, so in the blog right now, there's the entire story. There are some blog posts that got 1,800 comments in 2 days, 3 days. I mean, talk about, like, it's a huge social proof. And also, I was very present during the first launch because I didn't know what I was doing, so I would answer people all the time. Like, if you go and read the comments, like, I'm always there, and I'm really giving them my heart and soul. So, you know, like, I can make them private. Like, you know, I understand how to do that. It's very easy in WordPress. At the same time, it seems I'm losing a bit. Now, that's for that part, okay? Now, the other part I want to ask you is, like, as far as moderating comments, the way I'm set up right now, the first time somebody writes a comment, I need to approve it. After that, they can write as much as they want. And because, you know, they get a conversation going on those comments. Like, you don't get 1,800 comments. Like, 1,800 comments is probably 200 or 300 people that start talking on the blog. They use it, like, as a chat.
Right.
I wanted to know if that's okay. Now, going back, like, if I get a comment that's published and going back, like, a day or even 6, 7, 8 hours later and delete it, it's kind of a problem because then people go back and say, oh, there was a comment, it was deleted. And my whole point is that I leave everything open and everything's – most of the things are published unless they talk about competitors and they make names and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
– I think that's a good way to go to, you know, once you approve a comment from someone, then all of their comments, you know, just go right through. So that's just a setting in WordPress for the people that
– Right.
I'm having a hard time talking here. So, Walter, yeah, just for the other people listening, you can basically set it up in WordPress so that once you approve a comment by an individual, then further comments by the individual don't have to be approved. They're automatically approved. So that's the way Walter did it. I think that's a good way to go because, you know, once someone shows, you know, that they're a legitimate person, they're a real person, you know, then you can generally, you know, you've got greater trust in that person. And, yes, it is the downside of that is then if that person comes back and puts stuff up there that you don't want up there, if you go back later and delete it, then some people have already seen it. And you know, generally people don't like censorship. And I'm not generally in favor of censorship. Like I said earlier, it is your blog. You should definitely feel you know, you have the right to delete stuff. But, I mean, I don't go around advertising that I delete, you know, that I delete. And actually, I don't delete it because I moderate everything. Or I have people moderate. You know, I have some people on my team moderate it.
So they get moderated before you even publish them, pretty much.
Yeah,
so they're you're not on the thing that where, like, if they do the first comment that they can just post.
I haven't done it that way. Generally, I will tell you this. I don't think it's a bad way to go. I know with my site, we literally have 24-hour coverage on the blog, so people are watching the comments 24 hours a day during a launch. And so if a comment is put up there, it will generally get approved, you know, certainly within an hour, generally within, you know, 10 minutes. So that's the way I handle it. The way you handle it, I think, is good as well. You know, my rule of thumb when I'm moderating posts is I don't mind if a post is negative because, you know, if someone says, Jeff, you know, I tried to do a launch and it didn't work for me, that comment is just fine, you know, because I think, you know, there's never going to be 100% of people agreeing on everything, on anything. And so if 100% of your blog posts are all about how great, you know, if, say on my blog, 100% of the posts say, Jeff, you're great, or 100% of the posts say, Walter, you're great, people aren't going to believe it, you know. So I don't mind negative posts, but the posts I'm looking that I don't approve are like the damaging posts where people are just saying, Jeff's a thief, you know, I bought his product, tried to refund it, and they wouldn't give me my money back, which is absolutely, you know, never the case. I'm very generous about giving people, but something along that lines, or, you know, something where people are just being intentionally damaging or libelous, where they're out to attack you. And I mean, it could be your competitors. So those are the ones that I don't let through, but I do let the negative ones come through.
Well, you know, for the people listening, I can tell you, I had comments like, this guy is just trying to steal your money, and I left them up there. And you know, the raving fans, created a big discussion. And I mean, they came back and just crushed the person. So, you know, I do understand that. And by the way, the negative ones usually are objections, even sometimes they're very strong. And
thanks so much for saying that, Walter. That's a key point. Is the best situation in the world, this is critical that everyone gets, the best situation in the world is not that everyone writes and says how great you are. The best situation is when someone writes something negative and your fans come back and defend you. That the power in that is unbelievable. And
if it is.
Yep, and you saw that in your blog post, right? So, I mean, or in the comments.
And I can tell you, I mean, I had the open rates like 80 to 90% of my launch list. On the sub list, I usually do 80 to 90%. And I think that's also part of it because they, you know, it gets the discussion going and people are like, who is this guy? I mean, how can he have this bunch of people? I mean, is it all fake? But then you cannot fake 1,800 comments in 2 days.
Right.
I mean, you know, then people are like, you know, that's not possible. And,
right.
And but anyway, okay. I guess I'm done. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay, thank you, Walter. Great. That was awesome question and awesome comments, and thanks for sharing your experience because I just want to stress that over and over. And this works not just on your blog but, like, in forums, on Twitter, any situation, when you have people stepping up to defend you, and you will if you run your business right and create raving fans, when people step up to defend you, and they'll get passionate about it, and that is the most powerful social proof in existence. So, you know, don't worry about negative posts on your blog. Kill the damaging ones where people are just looking to hurt you. You know, those just, they never, ever get approved. People just, you know, just attacking often because, you know, that's a sport they enjoy. They go around looking for people to attack, or maybe it's competitors, you know, looking to attack. So those don't get approved. But the damaging ones the damaging ones don't get approved. The negative ones, you can let those go and let your raving fans take care of them. Okay, we have one more question here. If someone else got a question, go ahead, hit star one to raise your hand. Otherwise, it's going to be our last question here. Okay, here we go. Hello?
Hello, this is Benedict.
Hey, Benedict.
Yes, hope I don't get lost this week. Sorry about last week. The call kept on dropping. It was clear all the way up. But here's my question.
Oh, sorry about that.
Here's my question, Jeff. Thank you for your content, and this is really, really empowering. I have a question around the product launch. if one gets the people to subscribe to your list, could one do a rolling product launch with a series of emails?
And so I didn't quite catch the question.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I need to forward that a little bit. It seems to me that, you know, you're building up the hype, you're building up, you know, the story,
mm-hmm.
and you're closing them in on the product.
Yeah.
And couldn't that just be a rolling product launch? So, like, if X person signs up today and somebody signs up 3 weeks from now, as they get that series of emails, it could be a rolling product launch that, you know, three weeks from now, when I close that first person, X, they're in that closing position, and in 3 weeks' time when that person, or rather 6 weeks' time when that person who signs up 6 weeks from now, he's in the closing phase, couldn't we be just rolling our product launches ongoingly instead of having one specific day?
Totally. Absolutely. Yep,
okay.
100%. It's very, very effective and pretty easy to do just to build right into your autoresponder. I've seen this done in a lot of markets, especially markets where they aren't super connected and they aren't all talking to each other all the time, like in some forums and stuff, you know, bigger markets and stuff. You know, if you're in a tiny, tiny little niche and sort of like everyone in that niche hangs out in the one forum, you know, it's probably not going to work. But those niches are pretty few and far between. For most markets, what you're talking about will work perfectly.
Okay. That leads me to a second question, or rather a second comment on ProFollow and advice for other people. I ran into horrendous scripting problems on the templates in there, and it was only after about a week of, like, trying to sort this out that and through different calls that I was getting script errors on my in Firefox as I was editing the HTML script in there. And it turned out that I needed to copy all of my copy into Notepad and then copy and paste it into the template, and that avoided those scripting errors. Oh, my God, it drove me crazy for a couple of weeks.
Okay, yeah. To tell you the truth, I still don't send out HTML email. I still send text email.
I can see why.
but that's a point, and you know what, Benedict, that works for any HTML you're doing anywhere. Don't write in Word. Write in a text editor like Notepad. And you always want to use a text editor and then copy from there into, if you're creating an HTML page or HTML email, you always want to use Notepad. Now, I'll tell you this. Instead of Notepad, the program to get, if you're running Windows, is called Notetab, Notetab. That's a text editor that's like approximately 150 times more powerful than Notepad, the one that's built into Windows. So go to notetab.com. They have a free version, and they have a pro version. The free version is very, very powerful, and the pro version is like $20, and it was like literally the best $20 I've ever spent on software. I highly recommend it. In fact, that was like my only real sadness of moving from Windows to Mac was I couldn't take Notepad or Notetab with me. For the people running Mac, my favorite text editor is Text Wrangler, TextWrangler, and if you just Google it, you'll find it, Text Wrangler, and that's free. Now, I'm sure I'll get people writing back to me and telling me about their favorite text editor, because text editors are almost like religion, where people just get really attached to them, and they're willing to fight for their favorite text editor. There's other ones for both Word, for both Windows and Mac, but definitely use a text editor whenever you're composing text that's going to go into HTML. So, sorry you had those problems. I imagine you were probably using Word or something like that.
Oh, don't ask me. I was using Word, I was using Dreamweaver, and it got slower and slower, and then it would lock up, Firefox would crash, and it was a nightmare for a while. And I've been so inspired by your tuition that I've been like writing really cool copy, and I mean, it's come out from, I didn't know I had it in me.
Excellent.
And,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and it's like it's got all the triggers in there now, and it's just great. I've really sort of honed into a formula that I know is going to work now, and because of your tutelage, it's like, okay, I've got a good mentor to work with. And there's another question around ProFollow I had, and that is, it seems to me that there are better days to send out emails during the week, and it seems like Tuesday, Thursday, possibly Friday are good days.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if there's a way that you could encourage the people, and I've asked them to do this already, to encourage them that we could send out date-specific or date-specific emails.
Well, now, you can send out date-specific broadcasts. You're aware of that, right?
Yes.
So
they're not like like I do teleconference training on the online, and every Sunday night they come together with me, and there's like, you know, 10 of us or more in the teleconference training, and I send them out a reminder on like Thursdays with
right.
a series of questions, etc., to answer so that we can go in clean on the teleconference.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it would be really handy for me if I could just like automatically subscribe them to that list. They've already bought from me. They're already subscribed because
mm-hmm.
the teleconference training is my bonus.
Yeah.
So
have an autoresponder sequence that go out on certain days.
Okay.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah. They don't have that. But what you could do is you could basically schedule them. I mean, you could schedule a series of broadcasts out the next 52 weeks if you wanted. And if you create the broadcast, then you can actually create a copy of the broadcast, and then you just hit create copy, and then you would schedule it for the next week, and the next week, and the next week. You know, you could probably do that 3 or 4 weeks at a time.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so I could get that date specific, so it would go out on the Thursdays ongoingly. I got you. Right. Yeah, that kind of fits the bill, but the telephone conference training is, as a bonus, only lasts 3 months, so I need to close them out somehow
automatically
on that, too.
Yep. Yep. I'll send an email over to I know the owner of Profile, well, the owner of AWeber, which is the backbone behind Profile, is also a friend of mine, and so I can send him an email saying, just suggesting. I imagine, you know, sometimes he actually listens to my suggestions. You never know.
Yeah, we go. Yeah, because I saw some plugin that somebody is selling, and a piece of software plugin that would do that for a couple of $100, but it seemed like an awful lot for just a tiny little piece of software.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Jeff, and thank you for your tutelage. This is great.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Glad you could get through this week, Benedict. Okay. Next up, we have Barb. Hey, Barb, are you there? Hello? Hello? Oh.
Hello?
Hey, Barb.
It's Allison.
Allison.
You were saying Barb. I'm like, I guess I'm not up
yet. Okay, I'm sorry about that. So it's Allison
B-A-B-B-E.
Okay. And my eyes were deceiving me, and I jumped ahead. Okay, so sorry about that, Allison.
That's okay. I just didn't know I was on. I have a quick question. I'm still trying to – I have a very new list, and they came to me in a big batch because of the viral movie that I mentioned earlier. And I'm still trying to figure out if the people I have on my list are responsive. And so I guess I'm kind of – what I want to do is pull my product off the market and then relaunch it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out if there's something I can do to – test the responsiveness of the people on the list, or to get to know them a little bit better to see if they're really, interested in what I have to offer, because they kind of just showed up and they're very, very new, and I just can't tell if they're just there for the free thing or were they really interested.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, and really people a lot of times will ask for, like, response rates to surveys and this and that, and it varies dramatically by your niche, and your market, your offer, whatever. So it's hard and fast rules are difficult. But what I would think, they joined with from a movie. I would like put together another movie for them, and it doesn't have to be super involved, whatever. But put together another movie, and then send them to that, and track, you track what their click through rate is.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, I'm tracking because I have a weekly e-zine
mm-hmm.
that goes out, and I would say probably about 350 people out of the 2,000 on the list are clicking to go read the e-zine.
300. So that's about a 15% response.
Mm-hmm.
350 out of. Let me get my handy dandy calculator out. are actually 17.5% are clicking through. I mean, I think that's a pretty good response rate. Across the board, that's a pretty good rate. Another thing I would look at is that easing on a blog?
I have an easing and a blog.
But when you're sending the easing,
mm-hmm.
Do they have to click through to read it?
They do, and that's how I'm counting it, with an ad tracker.
Okay, so when they click through and they land on it, is there a place they can make comments?
No, there isn't. I do my e-zine once a week, and then I do Q&A on the blog, because I always ask them questions when they come through.
Uh-huh.
And they do comment on the blog, a few, very, very small number.
Yeah, well, blog comments are not easy to get, especially you have to ask for them explicitly to get any of them.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom, you might want to put up an e-zine, put up a blog post that points to that, and then at the bottom of the e-zine, say, ask them to leave a comment or join the conversation,
okay.
and then put a link back over to the blog post.
Okay. Now I have my blog separate from the e-zine goes in my articles area of my website, and I'm using Blogger for my blog.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're saying put a blog post that points to the article?
Yeah, just a real – it'd be a short, new article
yep.
on such and such posted.
Okay.
And, hey, I just put up a new article over on my, my article, a new e-zine mm-hmm. over here. Go check it out.
Okay.
Come back and leave a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all that really is it's a placeholder. It's actually just creating a place where you can send them from your e-zine back
right.
over. That's really all – it's just
– Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
those are ways you can judge, but I think 70.5% click-through is pretty darn good. But you could put up a video, put up a video on the blog and then
yeah.
send them something.
I started to do videos through YouTube, and I do get quite a few comments on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I probably need to expose my list to a lot of the YouTube videos a bit more.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing good.
Yeah. Okay, that helps.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, let's see. Next question. Rebby?
Yes, hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great, how are you?
Good.
I'm actually raising my hand because I wanted to respond to the person who was looking for something that will allow you to send out autoresponders on certain days. Uh-huh. I've been getting emails. There is, I think, currently now a launch for a product that actually does that. It applies... like you add it on to AWeber or any of the main autoresponders, and it will actually give you the option to set which day you want your sequences to go out that are not broadcasts but autoresponders. So if there's a way for me to contact that person, I can dig through my emails and see if I still have that link. But it sounds like it's exactly what he's looking for.
Hmm. Yeah, you want to send it in to me.
Okay.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
Excellent.
That's it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, let's see. We've got a wireless caller from 757 area code.
Hello? Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. Who am I speaking to?
I'm Reese.
Hey, Reese.
Got a question. I'm fairly new to the web, and I'm actually putting together my product, and I've gone ahead and started a blog. I've also am in the process of, putting together the videos and the content that I'm going to be providing for my clients, and also building a list through AWeber and emails that I'm sending them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting confused with, as far as the websites. There's I understand there needs to be a squeeze page. There also needs to be a sales letter, and then, since I'm going to be doing a membership-type site, I guess I need to have another website for the membership site.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that correct? So do I basically need, I have a blog, I got my membership site, or I need a membership site, a sales letter page as well as a squeeze page? Are these all, four separate things?
Yeah, well, they're four separate pages, but they don't have to be four separate sites.
Okay.
You could basically – what typically what people will do is they'll have the squeeze page be the main index page, the home page on any given site.
Okay.
And then when they go live, the sales letter could be, you know, on a different page on that site, or they can, you know, when they go live, you can change over that home page that from the squeeze page to the sales letter. That's done a lot. And then the blog could just be, you know, whatever that site is, slash blog.
Okay.
And the membership site, you're probably going to put on a different site, you know, altogether. But you could put it on that same site as well.
You were saying that was a member or...
That's what I'm using. There's a lot of different software out there for it. You know, one, so a member, I think it's like, I'm going to guess, I can't remember, but I'm $150 approximately. And then it goes on your site. But it's pretty bare bones, and you have to sort of build it up, and you got to have someone that knows what they're doing probably put it together for you. There's another one like MemberGate is one that, you know, a lot of people like. It's a lot more expensive. It's several thousand dollars. I don't know exactly how much. But that will, you know, they'll basically build the site for you. It'll come, you know, they'll have templates, and you just tell them what colors you want and, you know, how you want it set up. And they'll set the thing up for you, and it'll include, you know, the shopping cart, and it will include the affiliate management. All that stuff's all built in. So you pay a bunch of money, but they'll build the thing for you. And then between those extremes, there's a lot of other options as well. So there's a tons of different ones you can use, and those are sort of two that tend to be big, like the bare bones versus the full, you know, Cadillac treatment, the two ends of the spectrum.
Okay, so the membership site is probably going to be its own site, whereas the squeeze page and sales page will be another one.
Yeah, typically. Although you could put them all in one too, especially like if it's not going to be, you know, an unbelievably huge launch where put it, like for me, I split them up because I didn't want the load on the machine on the server was something I was worried about, so I split them up, but you know. For most people, you could put them all on the same website.
Okay. All right, great. That's all I had.
Cool.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Okay, I think we got one last question here. Hello?
Hey, Jeff. It's Walter again.
Walter.
I raised my hand when I thought there were no many other people online. But anyway, quick question for you. About videos. I have a tendency to, like my instinct is to do videos where people can see me. However, they're much more difficult to do because, you know, the cuts and stuff, if you need to cut them, it's a problem. And I also see a lot of people that do, like, for example, like, Mass Control, like the launch, there was a lot of video with Frank in it, but, and actually he did something pretty cool. Like he started off with a PowerPoint presentation where you couldn't see him. And then you saw him for like a minute to 20 seconds. And then there was another PowerPoint. And then you start seeing him more and more until the end. I think the end was another PowerPoint presentation to about the product and the offer kind of thing. But then when you go into the program, it was all, screenshots, like it was on screencast. It was you wouldn't see him at all.
Right.
In your case, I remember I saw you once. I mean, I went through. I didn't do, you know, I didn't do the launch last time, but I went and looked at your material and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of screen capture, and I think there's only one video where you see the price. When you say the price, there you are in the woods, and you recorded that, and I can see you.
Yep.
What's your opinion on that? I mean, it seems like there's another part of me that says when you do a video that is a PowerPoint presentation or a mind map, whatever that is, it is powerful because there are no distractions kind of thing.
Right.
And the other hand, like, if they see you, I don't know. I just want your opinion on that.
Okay, yeah, it's a good question. So for people at home listening, you know, there's two primary styles of video, and one is full motion video where, you know, you see a picture like, you know, it's on TV, and the other is screen capture like, you know, we used earlier in this presentation, and in the PLF2 videos are screen capture videos. So there's positives and negatives for both. the full motion, especially, you know, when they can see you, people like to see other people. They connect to other people, especially, you know, this comes down to your presence on the camera. You know, whether you can be believable, whether you can speak with authority. A lot of times that's tougher to pull, a little tougher to pull off full motion than it is with a screen capture. It's also the editing tends to be a little more complicated. And the actual video shoot itself, I mean, I could be, you know, for the screen caps, I could be sitting here in my bathrobe, in my basement, you know, doing screen caps and no one's going to know the difference. You know, if you're going to do full motion video, you got to, you know, you got to look presentable at least, and you got to worry about the lighting, and it's just a little more complicated to make it look good. Now, it doesn't, even if it doesn't have to look professional, if you look at my videos, they're certainly not super pro quality. I think the picture tends to be pretty clear. The lighting tends to be pretty good, but, you know, it's definitely not pro quality, and the cuts aren't pro quality cuts. You don't necessarily need that unless you're selling a product on editing video or something. So basically, screen captures are easier. They can be, it's easier to be, if you're just doing a talking head video where you're just sitting there talking, they can get pretty darn boring. This may sound counterintuitive, but it's, I think it tends to get more boring faster if it's just a talking head. Even if, you know, screen capture, even if they're looking at the same PowerPoint screen for 30 seconds or a minute, for some reason that's a little more compelling, you know, after a while than it is to watch, you know, the same talking head picture for a long time. Now, Walter, you mentioned Frank Kern and he mixing it up. And that's a really powerful way to go. In fact, that's one of the few things that I know that I'm pretty sure Frank taught in Mass Control. He shared this with me one-on-one. It's what he calls the bounce method. And that's where if you take people through different scenes and you take them and also take them from full motion to the screen capture, they feel it, often it creates a feeling in the person, the viewer's mind, that they've been with you a longer time and they know you a little bit better. So there's some psychology behind that.
He got that from the dating market.
Right. Frank calls it the bounce method, and he learned it from watching what people were teaching in the dating market. And I think it's really powerful. The psychology makes sense. I have done some of the bounce stuff myself. With the original launch last spring, I think I did 2 full motion videos, and I probably did 3 or 4 screen capture. So frankly, I think it's, if you can do both in a launch, it's good to mix them up, because you never want to be predictable. You want to be, you know, have your stuff be coming across as original as possible, and mixing stuff up. So I think mixing the two is great, and if you can pull off full motion, I think it's great to throw in some full motion, and it's also great to mix them within a video. But, you know, it sort of depends on your and each person's capability and how comfortable you are in full motion and how on your skill level, whether you can actually, you know, get the video shot and edit it and make a compelling video.
Yeah, and I guess to close that for the people listening, it's really powerful to do them in the car. If you can, because you wouldn't go in the car with a stranger.
Right.
So, like, if you're driving and Frank does this all the time. If you're driving and there is a shot from the passenger seat, like they feel like they're driving the car with you. So automatically you're kind of a friend of them, just because of that. Anyway, thanks so much, Jeff.
Oh, you're welcome, Walter.
Have a good night.
You too. Yeah, so if you look, I can send a link actually to my La Jolla video, and that was actually shot when I was out visiting Frank Kern, and it was shot with me driving his famous Jeep Scrambler, and Frank was actually the person doing the filming. And so we did a shot of me driving through his neighborhood, driving his Jeep, ostensibly going to his office, even though, like, we left his office and we were just driving around the block, went to his office, me take a shot of me walking up to the office, and then the next shot, I'm in his living room of his office with Frank Kern and Abbott Paig, and then we do a lengthy interview. And so there we bounced between 3 scenes, from the scrambler to me walking up to the actual living room scene. So that's some of the the bounce, you're putting the bounce theory in action, and that's where if you take people through a series of different scenes, then the theory is they feel like they're getting to know you a little bit better, and that's always a good thing if you're going to end up trying to sell them something. So that's sort of my little more information on video and a little bit on the bounce theory, as taught by Frank Kern in Mass Control, which he learned from the dating market, the stuff those guys are putting out. So that's it. That was the last question. Hope you guys got a lot out of this call. We had some real good questions this week, and it was fun to go through them. So that's going to be a wrap. We'll talk to you. I'm not even sure when the next call is scheduled at this point. I don't have my calendar up, but I'll talk to you on the next call, which will be our Module 5 call. Thanks a lot, folks. Bye-bye.